Okay, about time to get started, I believe. Good morning and welcome to our class this morning. We are rapidly approaching toward the end of Genesis. Got finished up this month. Less than 17. I think we got 23, something like that. So moving right along. Chapters 31, 32, and 33 this morning. If you look at the reading assignment for next time, I think it's 34 through 38, but you skip 37. 37 will pick up later. That's Joseph is stuck in one chapter in the middle of it there. So skip 37 in your reading next time to get your reading done. Let's back up a little bit this morning and go back to where we were. In fact, let's back up just a little bit before that. We'll pick up this morning with Jacob leaving home and going back to the home country. But back up, what caused him to leave? Why is he leaving home and going back to the place of his parents? Threat from Esau. From Esau's going to kill him because what did Jacob do? Stole the blessing in this case, the birthright he already got. Now he stole the blessing. Went in to lie to his father, deceived his father, and stole the blessing. So Esau's hatred came up there and says, I will kill him. So because of that, he's going to go back for a few days, it says, back to the home country. So he leaves Beersheba. He's going back up north through the land of Canaan. He's going back across the Euphrates River back up to Padan Aram. But as he goes up, he stops at what was called Luz. It's renamed to Bethel or Bethel, El being God there. He had a dream there of a ladder that reached up into heaven, a staircase, if it will. And who's at the very top of the staircase? God is. And angels are walking up and down the staircase there. And so he sees this dream, this ladder in his dream. God appeared to him. And then after that, he repeated the promises, the same three promises he gave given to Abraham and to Isaac about the land, give you this land, like a great nation from you, and through your seed, all the nations will be blessed. And he adds one to it this time for Jacob. And he says, behold, I'll be with you wherever you go. So then Jacob wakes from this, and why did he justly call this an awesome place? What made it awesome? The presence of God was there, yeah. And that's probably what the name Bethel means here, or Bethel. So Jacob turns around then and makes a promise back. He vows to follow God, that the Lord be his God, and he would give God a tent of everything that he had. And this turnaround here, we'll talk about at the end of our class today, this change that comes about in Jacob here. So he goes on to the east then, arrives in Padan Aram, which is the old home country. And the shepherds are gathered there to water their sheep. And they're waiting for the rest of them to come in, one of which will be Rachel. So Rachel comes up with her sheep. And Jacob introduces himself to her. He is the father of, he's the son of Rebekah, and Rachel is the daughter of Laban, who are brothers and sisters. So she goes in to tell Laban who she's met. He comes out and gives Jacob a warm welcome. Come stay with us. And he stays about a month. Don't go be gone 2 days, remember. Keep that in mind because he's fleeing from Esau. So he stays about a month. They said, well, if you're going to stay and work for us, we'll negotiate some wages here. You ought to get paid something for it. So they do. And what does he want for his wages? His daughter. Okay. He wants Rachel, the younger daughter. But Leah is the older, and she is not pretty like Rachel is. She's all beautiful. So he offers to work 7 years for Rachel. At the time, it lasts a few days. You would say he's young and in love, but how old is he? How old is he? Remember that? At the time of the blessing, we took that last time. 77 years old he is now. So 77 years old when he... Jacob and Esau had the dispute over the blessing. So after the 7 years have passed, Laban prepares a feast. But then he gets Leah instead of Rachel. And the reason is they say the older must marry first. So he agrees to work 7 more years for Rachel, but he goes and gets her up front instead of having to work the 7 years first. It's also 2 handmaidens, 1 from Leah and 1 for Rachel, so he's got 4 women involved in his life now. And then, which one do you love? Rachel. Okay. And I had on my slide, he loved Rachel more, and because of Jeff's comments last night, I put the question marks out there. Here's he didn't love Leah at all, based on her comments about the son she had. So, this gets into the children then. Leah has 4. Rachel gives her handmaid for 2, Bilhah. Then Leah gives her handmaid for 2, Zilpah. Then Leah has 2 more, and then Rachel has 2. Only one of which we have now. So this is the sons in the order of their birth. Most of us learned those when we're little, when we're kids. So those. So he's been there 14 years, and he's ready to leave and go back. But Laban wants him to stay longer. He pleads him to stay. So he negotiates some more wages here. And what they decide to do is all the flocks that are born, the spots or speckles or discolorations of whatever kind, will be Jacob's. That'll be very clear, easy to distinguish which ones are which. So they go through the flock and take all the ones that are that way now, the spotty ones out, move them away. So that Jacob has just the white ones left to maintain there for Laban. So then after all the other time that goes on then, they can tell which ones are which. Well, through this methods of imagination or what, as he strips the bark off of the different plants and makes the goats and the rams have various colored spots and speckled things born, Jacob is greatly blessed by the Lord. So the last verse on the slide there kind of ends up last time. It's really, really important to think about what he had now when he starts to leave, which he's going to see next here. Think about it. He's exceedingly prosperous, large flocks, female and male servants, camels and donkeys. So he's got lots and lots of stuff he's accumulated there while he's in Padan Aram. So when he gets ready to leave, which is what we're going to take off next here, think about all this large group that's got to go with all these flocks and herds and the people that's involved with it there. So he decides it's time to leave. Laban's sons, we're getting into chapter 31 now. Laban's sons are ill toward him. They see him as doing what? What is he getting from them? All the best of everything, and he getting what should have been theirs, the inheritance and stuff like this. So they get ill toward him. And Laban's attitude has changed even toward him now. He doesn't feel that him toward him like he was back earlier in the relationship here. The big thing that got him to leave was what? Who told him to leave? God did, okay? God appears to him in a dream and tells him to go back to his father's land. Now, why would it be important for him to go back to the land of Canaan? That's the promised land. It's the inheritance. It's been promised to give to him and his descendants. So go back to it there. That's where the inheritance is going to be. So God appears to him in a dream, tells him to go back. So he calls his 2 wives, Leah and Rachel, to come out in the fields and meet him and talk to him about this. So he recounts to them, to the 2 wives, all the what's happened, how he's been blessed by the Lord, and how Laban has turned against him. He's changed his wages 10 times, he says. He's trying to mix things up into which combination of the flocks he'll get. And so, then he says, as to that then, that God's appeared to him and he tells us to go back. So now he's got to get a reaction from them. What are they going to do? So they look at it and they say, what's left here for us? There's no reason for us to stay here this anymore because there's no inheritance for us here. So they say, we'll go with him. We will leave and we will go. Now, they've been there 20 years now, since Jacob first arrived. So it's been a long time here. But their willingness to go with him, this verse popped back in my mind. We looked at it several times here. They're going to leave their father and go with their husband. should do here. So he gets together his wives, his son, his livestock, all these possessions, and he's ready to leave and take off. Now, he's not going to make breakneck speed with that kind of crowd going. Small animals, nursing animals. Laban is 3 days away shearing sheep. So he gets a 3-day head start on Laban. And Rachel, to add a little insult to it here, steals her father's household idols to take with her. So after the word gets to Laban, they have left. He goes to pursue them. Takes him 7 days to catch up with them. But on the way, God appears to Laban. Yeah. I don't know what Laban went to do on his way there. He was upset about them leaving. He was upset about taking the wives and his daughters and his grandchildren away from him. Not really what he had intended to do when he met Jacob. Jacob was obviously afraid because of it. But the Lord appears to him and says, don't you do what? Don't say anything good or bad. You just go meet him. You go meet him essentially and tell your family goodbye, and that's it. Don't cause up any kind of stir, either good or bad. So Laban catches up with him then. He says, why'd you run off? Why'd you leave? Why'd you take my daughters, and why'd you take my grandchildren and just up and leave without saying goodbye? Well, Jacob says, I was afraid to. Now, think back now. What's the relationship that Laban and Jacob have at this time? Not exactly too good, okay? Not exactly too good. His sons have turned against him. Laban's attitude has changed about him, so not the best relationship. So he thinks in leaving, he stays around and asks, can I leave? It's not going to be a pretty scene. So he leaves. Maybe he says, I was afraid of what you might do. About that. Now, that'd be bad enough. Now Laban introduces just a little caveat to it here. He says, well, leaving's one thing. Why'd you have to steal my gods? Why'd you have to steal my idols to take with you? Now, what did Jacob know about that? Nothing. Okay. So much so that he promised what? If you find it, whoever's got it will die. Okay, you know, those rash promises we'll see lots of times. So he says, search them. Search them. Now, think about this man. Here's Laban, called up with his family, with his daughter and his grandchildren, and he accuses them of stealing his idol. That'd be something on its own just to accuse your own family of stealing from you here. But what's Laban fixing to do? Jacob tells him to search, look for it. If you find it, whoever's going to get it, going to die. So what does Laban literally do? He goes in their tents, one by one, right? And he searches through their things, looking for it. Has the relationship really gone bad? It's gotten pretty bad here. If he literally is going to go plow through all their possessions, trying to find this idol. There's no trust at all there, it seems to me. So, he searches. And Rachel has him in her saddlebag. She doesn't get up. And so he comes out and doesn't find him. So, Jacob then uses that, again, not knowing that they've been stolen even at this point, to rebuke Laban and say, here you are accusing us of all these things, stealing your idols, and whatever you got, bring them out here and set it before us. Tell us what you found, and we'll let people decide here what's going on. Laban's got a bunch of men with him. Well, Jacob's got his people there with him. Bring them out in the middle of us here and let's see what happens. Well, nothing there to bring out. Rachel has the idols all along. So, the relationship then, they say, okay, we can't depart like this. So they decide to make a covenant between the two of them. They prepare meals. They set up stones, markers there, and eventually wind up saying, you won't cross this point. You won't go past this monument to do me harm, and I won't come past the other way to do you harm. It's like a imaginary border-like thing, this monument they set up. They won't go back and forth. So they go depart in pieces, what it comes down to. So Laban returns in turn to go home. That's kind of the end of the relationship between Jacob and Laban. Very fearful when he left of what would happen when he did leave. And then once Laban caught up with him, even more fearful of what he might do to him then. Of course, the whole idol situation came in there. It made it even more difficult. But then it all ends up with a peaceful covenant there that we won't bother one another. However, Jacob's problems are just beginning. He got that one out of the way, the departure from Laban. But now in chapter 32, what's he got next to face? Esau. Well, why is that a problem? I'm going to kill him. Last time they saw each other, which was 20 years ago, okay? Keep that in mind. It's been 20 years have passed. But that time when they left, Esau was going to kill him. That was his last threat that he knew about. I will kill you. So he sends a messenger to Esau that Jacob is coming. Messengers come back with what kind of message? Esau is coming, but not by himself. What's he got? 400 men with him, okay? Now, what kind of army has Jacob got with him? Servants. A few servants, young children, a lot of flocks to look after. Not going to be a very good battle here. Esau, 400 men coming to face Jacob. So Jacob is quite concerned over the situation with Esau coming, with the threat that's out there. So he divides up his company and he puts two camps out there and says if Esau finds one and gets it, then the other will be left. Maybe one half will survive there. He splits them up there, kind of as a defensive type thing when Esau is supposed to come in. This is the big thing he does. As we get into the things we're going to talk about here at the end a little bit, go back a minute and think about when Jacob left home, start with. He stops at Bethel. What kind of relationship did he get with God there at Bethel? Covenants repeated, vowed to follow God, whatever. Who appeared to him at Padan Aram to have his time to leave? Lord did there. But when he comes back now, he's in a relationship where he prays to God here of the deliverance from Esau. So keep those three or four things in mind. We'll add a couple more to it here to go through there. So he prays to God for his deliverance from Esau. Then he starts setting up this present situation. We'll talk about that as we get into it too. But he starts putting out these in groups, droves it's called here, of gifts to Esau. And there's a significance about those gifts, but Andrew's going to read here verses 13, 14, 15, along there somewhere, chapter 32. And listen now. Think about what's moving down his, when Jacob and his people are moving along with all these flocks, this is only the force he's going to take out and give to Esau. You can imagine what else he's got left. But listen to this list of stuff he sends to Esau here. Go ahead, Andrew. That'd be a nice size farm just having that. You know, all those animals. But that's just what he took out to give them. We don't know what he had left. Obviously, quite a bit. So that's what he's going to send to Esau. Your old brother. And what's he tell the messengers to do? As you meet Esau, tell him what? These are a gift from your servant Jacob. He's coming along behind. Here's a gift for you. And it's at least three different sets of those people going out there with those gifts. Jacob gets his people all across the Jabbok River. Let's see. I think that's next, Jeff. Let's look at a couple of slides here, man. All right. Beersheba would be down off the bottom of the map down here. But when he left, he came up here to Luz or Bethel. He goes all up across the Euphrates up here to Padan Aram. Now coming back, they come through the country of Gilead here, this area here. And there are four of these rivers. There's a Jabbok here. That's the Yarmuk, the Jabbok, the Arnon, and then down to the bottom of the sea is the Zered. There's four of these little rivers that come into this, to the Jordan Basin here. This one's the Jabbok here. This kind of the valley they're going to walk down through, come in through here. Mizpah, is where Laban and Jacob met when they had their covenant in part of the country. Bob, his book, thinks Mizpah may be more up in Gilead instead of down this far on the map here. So it's unknown. It's the question mark out here where it really is. But then this is the area up here where he's going to send them across the Jabbok. And when he has the encounter with the wrestling, we'll get to that in a minute. Get these things kind of in mind. The Jabbok River going to come in through here. Then he's going to come across and then down through the Jordan Valley. Whoops. And up and come down. And another, again, this little valley to go through down through here. These are all mountains down through here. Little valley here that comes back down to Shechem. That's where we're going to wind up. I'm going to get the map in mind here. Now, this is the picture of the Jabbok River that comes in there about that territory. So you see the mountain chain up here. Why you wouldn't walk across this? Why you would go through these valleys as you travel around here to over the top of all these mountains with all this herd and people you've got traveling with you. Go down through the valley areas to walk there. So he sends everybody across the Jabbok here, and he's on the other side by himself. So what happens that night while he's on the, after everybody's gone across the river except Jacob? A man appears to him and he fights with him. Now, it's really more than just a man, okay? But they seem to wrestle all night and no one can prevail. He winds up touching Jacob's hip, causing a problem there with the nerve in it. And he says, Jacob asks him, says, tell me your name. Tell me who you are. And he doesn't want to tell him that. And there's commentaries here, reasons why, if it had a certain angel's name, would he put that in some high esteem or something like that? Reasons for that. But what does he do with Jacob's name then? Change his name to Israel. I'll get that again in a minute. It's going to appear a little later on. It happens again. God tells me his name's been changed to Israel. There's where this angel that Manny wrestled with, changed his name to Israel. Now, when he's finished with that wrestling scene, what did he say? I have seen what? I've seen the face of God and have survived. I've seen the face of God and have survived. So he prepares then to meet Esau after this, separates their wives, their children, puts the handmaidens with their children first, then Leah with her children next, and finally at the back, Joseph. And his mom, Rachel, the one that would be his favorite. Joseph, about 6 years old, that's been tell at this time. We do some calculations. Bob goes in his book, look at the age there. But he was born about the time that he decided to stay in the land and work the last 6 years for Laban. So 6 years old, a bunch of young kids here running around. So after the different droves of gifts come up to Esau, finally, they come up. The handmaids and their children bow down to him. And what does Jacob do as he approaches Esau? Bows down 7 times, okay, trying in every way he can to get on the good side of Esau, since Esau is threatened to kill him. What is Esau's reaction to the gift that he sent to him? Don't give them back. I don't need these things here. And we'll talk about those words here for just in a minute. He doesn't need them. So he said, I've got enough, is what Esau said. I don't need these. I've got enough. And then Jacob comes back, and he talks to him a little bit more, and he says, no, you keep them. I have enough. And there's a play on words of this word enough here. We'll look at some slides for that just in a minute. Just notice the words of enough that Esau uses first and Jacob comes back with second there. So after they found there's no strife between them, in a forgiveness type situation, it's like, Esau then says, come on, I'll escort you. And he says, no, you can't do that because I've got the nursing flocks and I've got these little children. You're going back and I'll follow you down there. Let me leave some of my men here with you. Well, no, you don't need that either. I can take care of myself. I'll be fine. So they separate and go that way. Esau goes back down to Mount Seir, which is down at the bottom of the Dead Sea. And Jacob travels on to Succoth, which is on the map just a minute ago. Builds some, apparently some pens and things there for his animals, stays there sometime, and then goes on to Beersheba and makes a purchase of land, and that's at the end of chapter 33 there. Okay, that's kind of through that part. We're going to talk about these words enough here in a minute. If I got anything else, we'll pitch in here, we'll take off again. All right. Some of these two words, enough, in the way they're used here. Jacob, Esau first says, well, the gifts that are coming, I don't need them, I have enough. Esau has changed. A total reaction, different reaction than what Jacob had expected. Apparently the resentment was gone. He hugs him, falls on his neck, he embraced. So an obvious piece of forgiveness here on Esau's part. But when he says, I have enough, and we'll see it in a minute, he says, I have plenty. I got all I need. I got all the flocks I need. I got all the possessions I need. I don't need anything else. What Esau is basically saying. But there's a thing about these gifts. If you go back and look at the Eastern times, the times that were in play here. When you have an enemy like this, and you send gifts to them, by accepting those gifts, they show their friendship. If they reject your gifts, then they are not over this, whatever's dividing you, they're not over that, and the division is still there. So it's very, very important to Esau, and to Jacob, that Esau accept these gifts. Gifts received by your superior, otherwise the friendship's not there. Esau had to receive these in order for Jacob to count him as his friend and be like on a relationship with it. So when he said, I've got enough, I don't need these, that's a problem in that culture there. He's accepting for Jacob to feel like he is over this and forgiven him. So Genesis 33:9, Esau says, I have enough, keep what you have. What did he have at this point? He had peace with his brother, for one thing. I didn't have enough flocks, but he had a relationship with his brother where he wasn't ready to kill him. He'd gotten over that, apparently, over this 20 years time frame here. And then that's greater than any possession you have, this relationship. Oftentimes in our families or extended families, there's rifts and problems there. And like this, they see the value of this relationship in the family here. But let's go back and think a little bit now about what's happened in the past. Talk about these relationships. 20 years earlier, about 20 years, we talked about that a little bit. What's the character of Esau 20 years ago? What's he like? The profane person, okay? Right there. Okay. He despised his birthright. He was a profane person. Esau was. What do you know about marriage? Married the women from around there, and really, what's the kind of why we say because of it? Who did it upset? His parents. I almost like he did it for spite, okay, for them, because they were so concerned about that. So, backing up that, Esau, we'll get a couple of slides about that in a minute. What's Jacob's character 20 years ago? What? A deceiver, exactly right. A deceiver and a liar. Think about that. All right. Here's Esau. Despises his birthright. A profane person, Hebrews calls it. Hated Jacob and threatened to kill him. I will kill him. That's kind of what Esau's like. And then on the marriage situation, he took wives that were agreed to his parents. Saw others later on there and took them because they did not please his father Isaac. a rebellious, profane person Esau was. So, Jacob, deceiver, I'm your firstborn Esau. I've done like you said do, the hair on his arms. Then I ask him, are you my son Esau? And he says, I am. So, what do you see here? Okay, excuse me, ain't neither one of them too good, right? That's 20 years ago. They both got major problems. Move it forward to today's time. How would you describe the two characters now? One's more mature spiritually. Okay, that's the exact point we're getting to. Esau has enough. He has plenty. He has all the flocks, all the possessions he needs. He's made peace with his brother. What did Jacob mean by the word enough he used? The word there means everything. So what did Jacob have is the question. What did one have that the other didn't have? One of them had God. Okay? There's absolutely no evidence at all that Esau had any relationship with God. But think about what he talked about that Jacob did as he went to Bethel, as he at Padan Aram, God spoke to him there. He came back. He wrestled with the angel, saw the God face to face there. Esau's coming. He prays to him there. He has now built a relationship with God. God made the promises to him. He's vowed to follow God. So there's a big difference between them from that standpoint. One has a relationship with God. The other one hasn't. At least there's no evidence of any kind that he has. He made peace with his brother. That's great. He's still missing something. So the question is, could Esau have been different? Could Jacob have continued in his deceit? Sure. It's all about repentance. It's about that change. So I'll get to it here. Repentance. To change one's mind and purpose. So to gain some knowledge, make some realization. True repentance. A change of mind and purpose of life. And we get remission of sins because of it. So the big thing here is repentance is a change. They both changed. Just one didn't change enough. Change our purpose, change our mind, our life, the way we live. A change for good. Repentance, a true sense of one's own guilt and sinfulness, an anticipation of God's mercy because of Christ. Here's the question. Well, a couple more slides. Sin, repentance, and actually hatred of sin and turning back it from God. It's the good here. A persistent endeavor for a holy life and walking with God in the way He commands. I turn my life over to God. I change from what I was doing and now with God. But here's a question for us. We got about 5 minutes to, I'd hear some comments about any of this. Why the difference? Why are they different, these two guys? What do we do? They made choices. Both of them. We make choices. We choose our character. We choose our relationship to God. We choose if we're going to change. We choose how much to change. So, I left you 5 minutes. Surely somebody's got a comment about all this. Yes, sir. Yeah, Rob's point is Esau had changed. Esau had changed. He didn't want to kill his brother anymore. He met him and he didn't want his gifts, not because of refusing his gifts, as in the custom type thing there, but he didn't want them because he had plenty himself. He didn't need the gifts. He had matured enough to rebuild that relationship with Jacob there. So that's a great change on Esau's part. I'm not believing that change at all. It's a big difference I'm trying to get to between him and Jacob is, what did Jacob do? that their relationship with God. That's a big, big difference between the two. We don't know when Esau got over this hatred. This, I'm going to kill you. There's 20 years time lapse here. So we don't know whether it was hate him for 18 years and he got over. Don't know whether when word was sent that Jacob was coming. That was the reaction then. Somewhere though in that process though, Esau got over this thing and he got his heart right as far as Jacob's concerned. And that's the point that I was talking about over here. You can't take that burden of hatred with you forever and be accepted. So Esau had made great progress, no doubt about that. I'm not trying to belittle that at all. It's just he did not have a relationship with God that Jacob did. Goes. And that's not the last skirmish between the two nations, the Edomites, Esau, or the father of the Edomites, and they and Israel will have more battles for us over here. Okay, anybody else? When they went to Succoth, the city, they went to, actually left that, first when they got back into Canaan, the city Succoth, they're going down to Shechem, the lady on it. Succoth, the word means booths. They built apparently some places for the animals there, booths or tents or something like that. And the Feast of Tabernacles, that the Jews still celebrate right now, is also called the Feast of Succoth. Booths. All right. Next time we get into 3, 4, 5, 6, and 8, I think it is. 8's a kind of unusual chapter. Story about Judah and his great mess he made. Chapter 38. So read through those and we'll pick them up next.